This is The Guardian.
. 2024 was full of surprising science which kept us busy, from a new strain of Mpox emerging in the DRC.
These infectious pus-filled lesions are due to the Mpox virus. And according to Africa's top public health body, the speed at which a new, more transmissible strain is spreading is causing grave concerns.
To artificial intelligence dominating the Nobel Prizes.
2024 has turned out to be the year of AI at the Nobels, with Demis Hassabis sharing the chemistry prize and Jeff Hinton sharing the physics prize.
And two astronauts setting off for a week in space and not coming back. Not yet, at least.
Yeah, eventually we want to go home because we left our families a little while ago, but we have a lot to do while we're up here. We've got to get all that stuff done before we go home.
So what can we look forward to this year? Where could we see game-changing breakthroughs? And what questions and challenges will new discoveries bring? I'm The Guardian science editor, Ian Sample, and today on Science Weekly, we're looking at the science stories we'll all be talking about in 2025. I'm joined by science correspondent Hannah Devlin. Hi, Hannah.
Good morning.
Always good to have you on the podcast for the annual look ahead. It's already been a busy start to the year. There's tons for us to talk about, so let's get cracking. One story that's been rumbling on for a while has already made headlines this year, and that's the ongoing bird flu outbreak. We heard last week that a patient from Louisiana has become the first person in the US to die from the infection. So what's going on?
Yeah, so this is a sort of the latest development in a story that's been rumbling on. And in these cases, you only tend to get limited details of exactly what happened. What we do know is it's a patient in Louisiana. They were over 65 and thought to have had other underlying health conditions. And the patient became ill after being exposed to a personal flock of birds and other wild birds. So although it is a sort of new development, it doesn't suggest that there's a sort of new level of concern that's come with this latest case. And as far as we know, there's also not any suggestion that the virus has changed genetically in some way that it kind of makes it easier to spread to humans or between humans. But 5 years on from COVID, there is this conversation about how alert we need to be to the possibilities of future pandemics and, you know, what kind of preparations we need to put in place. So I'm wondering, are there other risky viruses out there that people are looking out for?
I think one of the viruses that people will have probably seen headlines around is one that's causing problems in China, which is human metapneumovirus. And that's a well-known virus. We have it over here. Really just tends to cause a common cold or your cold-like symptoms. What can happen, though, is it can lead to pneumonia, and that's been causing some problems in China. It just seems to be a bad year for it. And the cases are going up a little bit over here, but nothing too alarming just yet. But I wanted to say something before we move on, just to inject a little bit of optimism and sort of upbeat news into the look ahead, if you like, is that it's not caused by a virus, but the world might make some pretty good progress with malaria this year. Now, obviously, malaria is caused by a parasite, but you can still produce vaccines against parasites. And two new malaria vaccines started getting rolled out in more than a dozen sub-Saharan African countries last year. And the hope is to reach about 14 million children in 25 countries this year. It's going to take a while to get good data on how well those children have been protected, but I think it's just really heartening to see global public health experts saying that we might actually make a dent on malaria this year because of these vaccines. It'll be amazing if that happens. Hannah, while we're still on health, there's a lot of interesting clinical trials underway that we might start seeing results from in 2025, including these trials looking at CAR T cells. So these are these genetically engineered immune cells. What's going on with those? What are those trials going to be looking at with those cells?
Yeah, so CAR T cell therapy has mostly been used for cancer until now. So it involves taking out a patient's own T cells, which are immune cells, genetically engineering them normally to destroy cancer cells. So, you know, in the case of leukemia, it would be to destroy blood cells called B cells that have become cancerous. And then you put them back in the patient and they do the work for you, essentially. But B cells also power a lot of autoimmune diseases, such as MS, lupus, rheumatoid arthritis. So there's been this idea that you could deploy the same technique for treating these autoimmune illnesses. And so late last year, we saw the first phase one trial of using CAR T cell therapy for lupus. So that's an illness where the immune cells target the body's own tissues and joints, and it, you know, can even include the brain. And then there's also been a phase one trial in the US for MS. Because these are quite small trials, I'd expect to start seeing the readout for some of these trials this year. And if this is effective, it's extremely exciting, because a lot of these autoimmune diseases, there are treatments that exist that can help, but they are only partially effective for some conditions, and for some patients, they really don't work very well at all.
I think there are some other trials which I'm really interested in that are going to be adapting drugs to other conditions this year. And one of the biggest stories in science and health last year was this explosion of these weight loss drugs, chiefly these GLP-1 agonists, as they're known. And people will have maybe heard of the sort of the name semaglutide, or at least the brand names like Wegovy and Ozempic. And those are injections, and they seem to be incredibly effective at getting people to lose weight, at least as long as you're on those drugs. So there's a really interesting trial coming around this year, a phase three from Eli Lilly, the US drug firm, and they're looking at an oral daily pill. That could be really interesting, because if you can have an oral pill that does this job instead of an injection, it's going to be cheaper, it's going to be easier to give to people. But coming back to what I was saying earlier, is people are going to be investigating these drugs for whether they can help with addiction, alcohol, things like that. Can they help with cardiovascular disease? And then really intriguingly, dementia and Parkinson's and Alzheimer's, because these GLP-1 agonists, they work in a lot of different ways in the body. They're not just suppressing appetite. And I don't think we really know yet what other things they might benefit.
How are people kind of envisaging these might be used in the future? I mean, the idea that a single drug could have such potentially beneficial effects across such a wide number of diseases and conditions and risk factors. Yeah. Are we all going to be just taking a little tiny dose of these things every day?
You wonder, don't you? Because once you understand the biology and the biochemistry of what's going on, then you can start having actually more bespoke drugs for those particular conditions. And it, you know, there's more drugs coming along the line which are GLP-1 agonists, but they're also combining them with other things like antibodies to hit more targets at once. So I think the understanding of actually what is happening and how these drugs are helping, if indeed they do with some of these other conditions, will hopefully just spur research into these other directions themselves for more bespoke drugs, I think. Hannah, it's going to be another exciting year in space this year after a pretty bumper one last year. I mean, there's loads to chat about here, but let's just start with the internet's chief protagonist, Elon Musk. I know he's busy trying to upend British and American politics, but his company SpaceX is making incredible strides forward, isn't it?
Yeah, I think this year could be a really transformative one for US space exploration. And actually, I think there is a political element to this, because of Elon Musk's close relationship with Trump. He'll have potentially a very big influence on space policy, on the space program. He's heading up this Department of Government Efficiency, so potentially he's going to be involved in NASA's budget. And I think that we could see a real rebalancing between the role of state-funded space exploration and private space exploration. I mean, I think that, you know, the first thing is going to be Musk's Starship rocket system, which is the biggest, most powerful rocket system ever built. It's 122 meters tall. It's designed to be fully reusable. The system has launched 6 times to date, so twice in 2023 and 4 times last year. This year, it's hoping to launch 25 times. SpaceX has said recently that they're hoping to have several launches per day. So it's just taking space exploration into a new level, really. But Ian, you know, space isn't just about rockets. This year is going to bring some really interesting science, including the Vera Rubin Observatory, which should be going online. What's that going to be aiming to uncover about the universe?
So this is a huge telescope, a huge camera that there is going to be on this telescope in Chile, in the Andes there. And it's going to be taking rapid pictures of the southern sky for a decade. I found this wonderful stat about it, where a single image taken by this camera is large enough to fill nearly 400 4K TV screens. And it's all about looking for, to try and understand more about what astrophysicists call dark energy and dark matter, which obviously those darks often mean we don't know what this is. These things account for about, said to account for about 95% of the known universe. So it's a big deal to understand this stuff. That's due to see first light, as in switch on, really, in July time. And I think that's just going to be one of these really lovely telescopes to watch. And, you know, it's like the James Webb, just to see what comes through from that as it gets cracking with its job.
And it feels as though this is a sort of new era for looking at dark matter and dark energy. We've also just recently had the launch of the European Space Agency's Euclid telescope. All the theorists who've got all these ideas and, you know, hypotheses about dark energy and dark matter have been waiting for these two big projects to get data to confirm or rule out the different thoughts. Euclid's due to get some of the first kind of big data sets back in the spring, I think. What are we expected to learn from that?
Yeah, so Euclid launched in 2023. We had images from it last year. But what we're going to get in the spring this year is the first dump of data, as they call it, the first survey of the dark universe. And that's going to be fascinating. You should be able to tease apart some of the different theories for, say, dark energy. I mean, one thing you want to try and understand is there a force we can call dark energy that is driving the universe to accelerate and expand? Or is it that we don't understand gravity well enough and that that is actually just behaving differently at certain scales? And the hope is that with the Euclid data set, certainly down the line, is that you'll be able to differentiate between these two types of things, because the universe will look different depending on which process is actually driving it. Hannah, we'd be remiss not to talk about artificial intelligence. It's already dominating the headlines. Here in the UK, the government has called for a huge public rollout of AI and published a massive action plan they say will mainline AI into the veins of the nation, whatever that means. Clearly, the UK wants to be at the forefront of AI, and we have a long history in AI research. But the government thinks it can boost economic growth within a few years, which has raised eyebrows in some quarters, and even tackle some of our social issues. So no shortage of questions there. I mean, how are we going to power all this AI while sticking to our net zero goals? And how are we going to address major problems like the use of AI to supercharge misinformation? Just last week, we heard Meta was dropping fact checkers on Facebook posts. Trust and scientific evidence could be in for a rocky ride, right?
Totally. And I think that there is something special about science when it comes to that, that for the average member of the public, it's really difficult to tell the difference between a robust, validated scientific source and, you know, a little graph or diagram that has been taken and used out of context or used to spread misinformation effectively. And you can see online that science is often used in this way, that it can be really difficult to tell the difference between proper science and something masquerading as science. But of course, you know, AI can be used for, you know, a huge variety of purposes. And I wouldn't want to suggest that it's having a negative impact in science itself. It's driving a huge amount of progress. Are there any particular areas of science where you think AI is going to have a sort of transformative or exciting impact this year?
AI is going to impact on pretty much every area of science and medicine. One trend we're seeing already is the use of multiple AI agents working together. There was a nice bit of work from Stanford last year that created a virtual lab from AI agents. It had a human in the loop, but one agent was the principal investigator, another one was a chemist, another a biologist, and so on. And they all worked together with their sort of different specialisms. And the Stanford team used this to design things called nanobodies, which are fragments of antibodies that bind to the COVID virus. And I'm sure we'll see a lot more of that approach this year. There's also a load of work directed at AI-powered medical diagnoses, whether from imaging or other medical data. But another area that I'm really interested in and that's growing fast is the use of AI to develop new materials. Now, Google's Gnome algorithm has already identified hundreds of thousands of new stable crystal structures. And the hope is that those lead to brand new battery materials, new superconductor materials, and so on. And that area, to me, feels incredibly ripe for progress this year. Okay, Hannah, so look, to finish off, what are you most excited to be covering in the next 12 months? I mean, is there anything coming up that you think, oh, I'm really looking forward to that?
Well, I'm hoping to get out to Switzerland to visit CERN and the Large Hadron Collider. So it's currently in shutdown, which is a sort of brief period where it's possible to go underground and tour the experiments, these huge tunnels and places where the collisions actually happen between these subatomic particles. And I think the LHC has been in a pretty quiet period the last few years for big scientific discoveries. And people are looking forward to what the next big colliders are going to be. But I think actually it's another area where AI and machine learning techniques are really coming into their own. So I think that is actually one to watch this year and could potentially be some interesting developments.
Well, I hope you get to go. Sounds really fascinating. Thanks very much for coming on and chatting it through.
Yeah, I enjoyed it. And see you back here in 2026 to see how many of them came true.
My thanks again to Hannah Devlin. To keep up to date with all our science coverage this year, just head to theguardian.com. And we're looking forward to bringing you another year of science breakthroughs and discoveries. We're not backed by a billionaire owner telling us what to cover and how, so our journalism is independent of corporate interests. But that also means we depend on you, our listeners and readers, to help support our output. If you feel able to, please consider supporting The Guardian via the link on the podcast page. Thank you. And that's it for today. This episode was produced by Madeline Finley. It was sound designed by Tony Onochuku. And the executive producer is Ellie Bury. We'll be back on Tuesday. See you then.
With social media bosses firing their fact checkers or openly campaigning for the far right, if you want to understand this moment in the world, not through platforms owned by some billionaire, but through people on the ground working to arrive at the truth. Listen to Today in Focus from The Guardian every weekday, wherever you get your podcasts.
This is The Guardian.